From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. We appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Radio Hour as we launch our 24th year on the air here in the Diocese of Sacramento. A pleasure to be with you. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are rejoicing and glad to welcome in a couple of parishioners from OLA, Dr. Greg Gillis and Carolyn Albers. Good day to you.
Good day to you.
Blessings
to both of you. I love OLA. You just have to say hola. And
we get that a lot.
I bet you do. Our Lady of the Assumption, great parish here in the Diocese of Sacramento. We're here to talk about the Gabriel Project. Tell us a little bit about the Gabriel Project as it pertains to OLA.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it. But the Gabriel Project, if people don't know, it originates from Archangel Gabriel, who obviously announced to Mary that she was going to be the mother of Jesus. And so he said to Mary, "Fear not, God is with you, and nothing is impossible with God." So our mission is basically to emotionally, spiritually, and materially support mothers in need who are pregnant. And OLA has the Gabriel Project for about the last 4 years, and Carolyn is in charge. And we got it through a guy named Mike Ronco. Mm-hmm. So initially, the Gabriel Project started in Texas in 1990. He moved it to California, Concord, California area in 97. So what is that, about 26 years ago to the East Bay area?
Right.
And then he came to our church, and Carolyn and I both heard him up there from the pulpit talking about what Gabriel Project was and how it could be incorporated in our parish and community. So we got involved. Spirit called us.
But, you know, it's interesting you say Archangel Gabriel. Our producer is named Gabe, and I thought it was named after him. But
oh, well, wait a minute. Is he an angel?
Well, he definitely is. He's got wings. So, yeah, he is a gift from God, I will tell you that. So the Gabriel Project is parish by parish, and it's now all under sort of the diocesan umbrella, if I understand that right.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's correct. What we do is the Gabriel Project, it builds a culture of life in the parish, and it is parish-based, and so each parish has to decide with their pastor, and it's not a referral service, so it's providing immediate care through your parish, but it's fully supported by the diocese. In fact, at some point, I'll tell you, there's a 1-800 number that everyone calls to figure out if you're a mother and you need help, which parish you belong to. And not all parishes have Gabriel Project. So one of our hopes is to encourage parishes to join and become part of it. But our main hope is to mothers out there or people who know people who are pregnant, who are maybe feeling alone or frightened or overwhelmed, that we can come to their aid. And we call ourselves angels who help the mothers, but we're not really angels. Technically, we're not in heaven, so we're parish angels. But we become a friend to them, and we help them with their walk beside them during their journey with pregnancy, and just try to provide, as we can, unconditional love and welcome everyone, regardless of faith or background.
Well, it's that 800 number is just a godsend, a great idea, where it's you know, it's sort of one size fits all instead of trying to figure out which parish you might, especially if somebody who's not Catholic, even those who are Catholic, might not know, you know, where they live and what parish they're in.
Yeah, and the number is, let me just say it, and maybe I can say it while we're doing this, for anyone who's listening, it's 1-800, then 910, and the way I remember it is the next numbers are backwards, 019, and then an extra 1. So it's 1-800-910-019, and then a 1.
I'm confused already.
Sorry. So it's 1-800-910-019.
I've got it down.
0191.
Yep. No, that's great. That's great. 800-910-0191.
You got it.
That's we will remember on a regular basis to give that number here on the Bishop's Hour, just in case somebody's listening in, knows somebody in need, or happens to be the person in need. How do these people find you? Other than that, I mean, do they see billboards? Do they? Is it in the bulletin? Or people listen to the radio? How other? I always worry about the people that fall through the cracks.
There are bumper stickers. We have brochures that we put in the back of the church. You can put them at your parish. We have a sign on the corner of at OLA in the corner.
Very good.
And it's a big sign, so you could drive by, and it just says pregnant, worried, need help. It's very basic, but it gives the 800 number. So that's how we reach out to those people in our area, at least.
I think that's just so important because, as you both know, obviously, this is designed to serve everybody, not just Catholics, not just people that are going to see it in the parish bulletin or hear it from the pulpit or something. You want people that are driving by the church. I know my home parish is in Davis is on a very two very busy streets, and it's right next to the public high school. It's right next to the library, right next to the community center, and so people are seeing the sign all day long, and that's fabulous.
Right.
Yeah,
right. It's the best way to reach out, and word of mouth. We've dealt with many people, obviously, that weren't Catholic, and they have a friend or somebody else in their apartment building, and they find out through just word of mouth too. So that helps, of course.
So. Give us a hypothetical. I know there's no such thing as a stereotype, especially with this issue. Everybody is really unique in their situation, and they know it well. But give us for instance, somebody now has the phone number.
Right.
What happens?
Well, if it's assigned to us at OLA, then I usually send out an email to my list of angels, and I give them just some very background information on the person that was referred to us, and we ask for help right away. Is there anybody out there that has the time and the ability and that would like to take on this person and be their angel? And we get a great response. We have a great community that is just super supportive. And people say, sure, I'll make first contact, and they make the phone call, and they talk to the person and get just some general information. What basically are they looking for? What kind of help they need? It ranges all over the board. So it's not only single moms with no family. We've had moms that are married with other children that are in hard, their families are in hard times, and they need baby items. So it's just, everybody is an individual, and they all need something else. You never know what you're going to get requested. If they request something that's out of our, able to help, we work with other facilities, like the Sacramento Life Center. We would refer them to, if somebody needs help with rent or that kind of thing, we refer them to St. Vincent de Paul. So, it just kind of depends what they're looking for. Sometimes they just need, I'm out of money. Do you have any diapers? Oh, yes, we do have diapers.
Bob, that's a great question. We offer a lot, but you're right. It's based on the need. So we've had homeless pregnant. We have some people who need help with, rent, or we've had cars we fixed. I remember one mother needed her van fixed, and she had four kids, and she was an amazing lady. She ended up driving herself to the hospital to have her baby with her four. But thank goodness she had a van that worked. So, it's all different kinds of things, and we have gotten comfortable with the community and the referral system to help with housing, like Bishop Gallegos. We We help, the Life Center is incredible to help with the medical care and the ultrasounds and clothing and counseling and you name it. So there's all different kinds of things that people need. But what always amazes me is that these mothers are just, from my experience and my conclusion, partly based on my own mother who had eight kids, is, I mean, these mothers are truly angels themselves and inspiring. This one mother, Debbie, that we worked with, I'm thinking of, she had like three kids and then was pregnant in an apartment by herself.
Wow.
No family support, no significant other, no car. And so, you know, there was appointments we took her to. Carolyn was shopping for her. We helped her build a crib in her home for her baby. You know, all kinds of things. And then it was during COVID, so Carolyn actually put together a Christmas tree and presents because they had nothing.
Wow. Greg, can I bring you my car? It could use some work.
I don't work on Ferraris.
You know, isn't it wonderful to see the safety net that the Catholic Church has built for people in need? You're talking about specifically, you know, somebody who's pregnant and needs some help. But as you mentioned, Sacramento Life Center, which will provide, you know, ultrasounds, will provide diapers, will provide formula, will provide counseling, will provide all kinds of things. The St. Vincent de Paul that can help with rent or maybe furniture or things like that at their store. The Bishop Gallegos home, the Mother Teresa home up in Placerville, the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. You just go on and on and on with all these organizations that are going to be able to help an individual in need. It isn't just one group, it's a whole bunch of groups. And I know a lot of the 40 Days for Life volunteers are willing to drive people to appointments and help them even on, you know, delivery and post-delivery. It's phenomenal.
I agree. I think it's God's network.
Yes, it is.
That's his connections for sure through the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm. And no, you know, no question about who are you and do you go to church or are you baptized or anything else. Just you're in need. We're going to help you.
Right.
Yeah. And we don't judge. God loves you no matter what. So, you know, and it's kind of refreshing, I found, because I worked healthcare in a secular system to be able to express your faith and to give spiritual comfort as a Catholic and to, like you said, use all those resources that the church has, especially the Catholic Church in our area.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about working in the secular world. You know, sometimes a friend, somebody you know, maybe you hear something in the community, somebody needs something, and I'll say to somebody not knowing they might be an atheist and say, well, we'll sure offer some prayers for you. And almost universally, even if they're non-believers, they say thank you and they're touched.
Yeah.
You know, it's
the same thing. Yeah, the people are, no matter where their background is, they are so appreciative of any little help that we can give them, and they're just so thankful. I think I get more out of it than they do because it just makes me feel so great to be able to do something. So it can be something really small, very minor, and they just are really thankful for any help.
Bob, I have to tag on to that. There is a kind of an inner energy that I think that feeds your soul with joy when you help others.
Yep.
You share God's love. I think it's better than chocolate.
Ooh, no, that's quite a statement, Doc.
Yeah,
someone might argue that, but I
don't know if there's any medical articles that.
What percent of cocoa chocolate are you talking about? Yeah, no, that's true. You know, it's really true, and it's good for the soul. It's good for the heart. I look back at the the magic moments in my life, you know, like if somebody said, okay, give us the top 10 things that ever happened to you in your life. And it has nothing to do with going to college or graduating from high school or maybe getting an award or winning a tennis match or anything else. It always has to do with something where you touched somebody or they touched you, you know. Almost, absolutely. You know, those are the magic moments in life.
Yep. And I think that we are privileged just to help guide these women as they seek God's will in their life. And we encourage, obviously, life. But there's no conditions, like you said. They don't have to pray. They don't have to go to church. They don't have to be Catholic. But we do invite them to come to Mass, and when we go and see them, we bring them a Bible and a rosary and a bulletin from OLA, and we basically share God's love and mercy, and we're hoping to bring some love and hope to these moms, basically through our acts of kindness to try to emulate.
Well, so often, you know, just giving love and hope to someone is enough to overcome a lot of their problems. The problems don't disappear, but the fact that they now know that somebody cares about them,
right,
giving them that hope and replacing maybe despair, because you hear a lot of stories of despair, and I think that's obviously the number one reason that people get abortions. And I really don't believe very many people are getting abortions out of just selfishness or, you know, I need to get ahead in life and this is going to hold me back. I think they really are in despair, so many of them, that because they don't see how this is going to work, and they're not getting maybe support from the father or from their family or from their friends. They're getting just the opposite, like, well, there's a quick fix to this problem. And you give them hope and say, hey, this is a good thing. You know, you're going to bring life into this world. You know,
that's what's so great too about the Gabriel Project, because in the main amazing handbook, it tells you that, and it recommends, and our it's not only to give them things and diapers and cribs and what have you, but, you know, we follow up, we call the moms, we check on them, how are you feeling, you know, what are you doing today, and we try to walk with them through their pregnancy, and even you know, send us a picture when the baby is born, and we kind of follow up and check with them throughout their pregnancy. And we've given them baby showers. This is always fun. But really, it's just a kind of a helping hand in being supportive and being there for them if they want to talk. And I think that's super important.
You know, you mentioned baby showers, and I just think that's so beautiful. There used to be a group. It was just a husband and wife that ran it. I haven't heard of it in the last couple of years, but the Showers on Wheels, you know.
Oh, I never heard that. That's cool.
And they would manage to get to go to a couple of their events. They'd find a parish hall somewhere that they got permission to use, and they'd have three or four young mothers who otherwise wouldn't have gotten a baby shower, and they would have car seats and strollers and, you know, gifts and a celebration, you know, a cake, and if they had kids, the little kids came, and
right.
I would take my kids to these events, and oh my, I mean, to see that not only is this no longer a problem, it's a celebration, and everybody else gets to have a baby shower. I just think that is such a wonderful thing to do.
Well, I think you hit it nail on the head. We should be celebrating life. You know, they estimate 63 million abortions since Roe versus Wade in 1973. And, you know, we want basically young women to appreciate the gift that God has given them through this life, and that they've been given God's love through this child, and that each life is precious, and we're made in God's image, and as it says, we are actually, you know, woven or knitted by God in our mother's womb. So God doesn't make mistakes, and but he does make miracles. And I think Carolyn and I think that that's what a baby is, and we're helping to support that.
Yeah, the words from Jeremiah before, you know, I knew you before I formed you in the womb. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't need much more than that.
Yes, at all, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that. That would stop me in my tracks right there if everybody questioned me about where does life come from. You know, that one right there is that's all we need to know. Well, this is if people want to get involved, again, the 800 number is 800-910-0191. Is there a number also at OLA that you'd like to share for people in your parish?
Well, we are encouraging people who listen to this, who belong to OLA, to join our Gabriel Project. But also, we're hoping that people listening can ask their priest. By the way, Father Edwino at our parish is so incredibly supportive of our ministry.
I know that. Yeah.
He actually gets part of his garage instead of having an extra car for all of our supplies that we get out to the mothers. So he's been a godsend. But if people want to, just Google OLA Carmichael and, they're feeling the spirit calling him to donate to Gabriel Project, that would be nice. But really, we're not looking for money. We're looking for moms. We're looking for people who, hey, I know someone who knows someone and maybe they need help.
That's excellent. Excellent. Well, anything I didn't ask that you want to share before we move on?
No.
I think we're good.
You said you got an award, though. What was that in?
Oh, I think it was in Little League because I finally made it to first base.
Nice.
You know how they have the little party at the pizza parlor after afterwards, and they got to give everybody on the team, there's a lot of most inspirational, happiest third baseman, all these things. And Bob got to first award was mine.
Probably most outspoken, I would guess.
Yeah, but, everybody needs a trophy to put on their mantle, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you too get my trophy today, that's for sure. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
And I'll look forward to our paths crossing again very soon, Greg and Carolyn. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Yeah, God bless. That's wow. It's so wonderful to run into people like that and to know what they're up to and what is going on. Again, the Gabriel Project is at a lot of parishes, and if it's not at your parish, maybe you can be the one that gets it started. Or, if somebody's living in an area and you need help, they will refer you to a parish which is close to you. So, and they will reach you very, very quickly. Again, that number is 800-910-0191, 800-910-0191. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Hi, this is Katie Parada, Executive Director of Catholic Schools for the Diocese of Sacramento, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's us. Welcome back. And we are just pleased and honored to have Bishop Soto in person.
Yeah, well, happy Easter, Bob.
Happy Easter to you.
It's good to be with you.
Good to be with you. We're still in the Easter season.
That's right.
Of course.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
Yes, indeed. And just came through Divine Mercy Sunday.
Right.
You look at, I still say Sister Faustina, but St. Faustina's diary, and you just crack it open to any page, and it's so inspiring.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. And all these great number of people came into the church on Holy
Saturday. Well, I'll say, I was at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament, and I'm not good at the numbers, but I'd say I probably baptized at least 15 people.
Wow.
You know, most of them adults.
Yeah.
And then I had another 50. I received one person into the church, and confirmed another. Or there was another 15 people who were baptized Catholic, but had not, you know, made
right.
not received their other sacraments.
Right.
So they were there. So I mean that we had a crowd. It was a little crowd.
That's wonderful. It's just wonderful to, as a cradle Catholic, and I know you're a cradle Catholic, to see people that have decided to go into the church. Although I was baptized the day I was born, and I gave my permission. But to see that is so inspiring.
Yeah, it is inspiring. Yeah. And of course, and each one has the story, you know, and,
right.
and that, so it's there's a certain gospel story related with each person, and I didn't have time to listen to each of their stories, but you know, it's afterwards, it's always you know, I've gotten to referring to it as the eighth sacrament now.
Oh,
is
wow.
Is the picture taking.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
it is.
So, and it's only valid if the bishop's there. So
that's
in case
right.
I saw it, wind up taking lots of pictures. But the nice thing is that, you know, who they draw close to them at that time,
right.
you know, and you know, whoever the person that was baptized or received to the church, and to see the family or friends
right.
gather around them for the picture. And it's a little glimmer of the stories
mm-hmm.
that brought them to the
right.
church. And you know that besides, obviously, Jesus and his wonderful mercy and wisdom— but that some of these individuals had something to do with
yeah.
having that person make that step and to plunge into the waters of baptism.
And I've heard stories from people who went because they were a family member or a friend and they weren't Catholic,
yeah.
and that led to their conversion.
Right,
you
right.
know, just seeing this and seeing how important it was and just being in the beautiful church.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think he would mind me telling, but I was, his last name escapes me, but Deacon Paul, who is the deacon in St. Dominic's in Orland.
Oh.
And right now his last name escapes me, but he and his wife were Baptists. They were, I had confirmation there, and he and the Father Mauricio and Deacon Alfredo was there, and we were talking, and his was a whole conversion story.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually he and his wife were married as Baptists. At some particular point, they became Episcopalians, and I think he was an Episcopalian priest. And and then they eventually, as he and his wife said, they came home, you know,
right.
and became part of the Catholic Church. And
wow.
And then he became a deacon. And
wow.
So he was quite a story.
He, with your permission, would be eligible to have become a Catholic priest.
If
he was a priest, say, an Episcopal
you
priest.
Know, since we're on the radio, Bob, I don't really.
yeah.
I mean, I'd have to look at the details.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, on a. In general, it's not automatic. But I, you know, there would be certain conditions that would be
right.
necessary, and
right.
and, but in any case, it was a very interesting,
yeah.
very interesting story.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. He's, but yeah. That's true. almost across the board when you have adult baptisms or adults coming into the church. There's always a gospel story attached to that.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful. And the Easter season goes, what, right up to Pentecost?
Right up to Pentecost. And, of course, and then, you know, how should I say, then so we have Pentecost, and then you have then the following Sunday is the Feast of the Holy Trinity, and then the Sunday after that is Corpus Christi. And so, like, you know, in some sense, it takes a while to really get back into ordinary time.
Yes, it does. It does. I love Corpus Christi with the procession. And,
oh, yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I remember we were on a family vacation, and we happened to be in Seattle, and went to the hotel. It was Saturday afternoon, and we said, is there a Catholic Church, because we figured there was a vigil mass
in Seattle. Okay, all right.
And he said, well, let me look it up. You know, he wasn't quite sure. You know, he knew where the Space Needle was, but he didn't. You know, and Pike's Market, but he didn't. And he directed us. Turned out it was the cathedral, and we show up at about 15 minutes, and here's this procession. I went, oh my gosh, it's Corpus Christi.
Yeah,
it was beautiful.
Oh, good.
Really. And what a witness that there
was,
for people.
That there was a procession of Corpus Christi in Seattle would be remarkable.
I would agree.
A public procession in Seattle, that would be remarkable.
Or Portland.
Or Portland,
They're both. I think I read one time, Portland's where I was born, but I think I read it was the most, Oregon was the most unchurched state in the nation. And it just went right. Like a dagger.
I'd be interesting to see the statistics of that in terms of, you know, is that because of the urban areas, and is that true? I mean, the seminary that I send some of our men to, Mount Angels, you get out to that area, and again, the rural areas, which is true here in California, it's a whole other different.
Way different.
Of course, rhythm of life.
One of your colleagues, Bishop Asha, was in the Diocese of Baker on the eastern side, and you're right. The demographics are just—it's the mountains. There's something about the mountains, you know, that high, dry air.
Maybe.
But I think you're right. It's the urban areas that have done that. But we're almost to this annual Dinner for the Poor.
Yes, that's right.
Saint DePaul.
Yeah.
This year, you know, usually they bring in a former Notre Dame football player to speak to the audience. Yeah. This time they're going to honor, and he's going to be the featured speaker, Father Dan Madigan,
right.
Who he didn't come with the Mercy Sisters in 1857, but he's been here a long time from the old country.
Well, and Father Madigan has talk about extraordinary. Many priests have been very exemplary in the area of the works of mercy, but I think you know, without hesitation, you know, Father Dan Madigan has been one of those stellar individuals in terms of who got the connection between, you know, the sacrament of charity and the works of charity, and that he his life, his trajectory as a parish priest has always been highlighted by his commitment to the works of charity.
Yeah,
starting with the Sacrament of Food Bank.
With the Sacrament of Food Bank, I think started at Immaculate Conception.
That's right.
And now the Sacrament of Food Bank is like they're the ones that distribute to 220 outlets now in the county of Sacramento.
It just shows you the you know, the power of logistics. I mean, the Sacramento Food Bank does many things well, but they are the master at getting food out to
exactly. They've gone from the model of you come to us to pick up the food to getting it out to parishes and community centers. I think last time we talked to Blake Young, the CEO, I think he said it was like 220 different outlets just within Sacramento County where food is distributed.
And I will say, Blake's done a great job. And again, that all started with, I'm trying to remember whether the Run for the Hungry started either while Dan Madigan was still the director,
I think they just had their 30th or 31st anniversary of the run.
So that
takes us back to early 1990s.
That itself is a phenomenal event.
You're the official starter.
Oh yeah. Well, for the first, there's two races. I do the first one.
You do the first one. Yeah.
Actually, I remember a couple of years. I did the first one, and Father Madigan did the second one.
Oh, okay. And they have like 30,000 people.
Oh yeah.
On a Thanksgiving morning.
Yeah.
You're right. I don't think there's another. I've seen the stats on it that there's not another Thanksgiving run anywhere in the country that has that kind of numbers.
Right. But getting back to the St. Vincent de Paul dinner, which is coming up
on Friday night.
That's just a great event. And obviously, recognizing Father Dan Madigan he definitely deserves, his work deserves to be recognized. But I also, want to take this opportunity to just acknowledge the heroic efforts of the men and women of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. It's just a great organization. And I always, in any conversation that I have with Vincentians, that there is just such passion and such generosity and cheerfulness about the work and why they do the work.
Right.
And that's been my experience even when I first became familiar with the Society of St. Vincent de Paul back in the Diocese of Orange, and that's been borne out here in Sacramento, that the people who are involved with the St. Vincent de Paul Society, for them it's a spirituality, and it's really that they serve the poor with a deep conviction that they are serving Christ, and they go out to meet the poor with that in the same way that almost one would make a visit to the Blessed Sacrament.
Right. You're exactly right. And the thing that's not, they don't have a big corporate office. They go out to the homes of the people they're going to serve. Sometimes the homeless.
Yeah.
And try to assess a need. It might be they need some rent. They might need food. There could be some medical problems, and they can't solve everything, but they will refer as best they can, and they go out in pairs.
Yeah.
And, we had Paul Starkey, one of the former presidents,
right,
a Notre Dame guy,
and
on the program a couple of weeks ago, and he said, because of COVID, their numbers were down a little bit in terms of volunteers, and that they're still looking for people, and they're always looking for people, and it's just it is such a wonderful organization, all volunteer, although they now have an executive director.
Right.
Which, to help run the store and all the—
Denise, I believe, is her name.
Yes. It's just remarkable. And they've are part of the Gabriel Project now, which is, I think, going to bear great fruit.
St. Vincent de Paul is a wonderful organization, and they do good work.
Yeah, very good. Well, here we are living in life issues are all over. I mean, it's become completely about politics, it seems now.
Yeah.
But we're seeing, I don't like the red state, blue state and all that, but we're seeing some states go one way on the abortion issue and other states going just the opposite, you know. And yet here we are in California, where we're one of those states that's I hate to say pro-abortion, but it's almost that's, you know.
I think you can say that. I mean, it's become a, you know, California leadership, political leadership, is really, how should I say, out to protect and enshrine the abortion industry, and it will be a very sad and a tragic legacy, because I think the arc of justice is sooner or later going to bend towards a society without abortion.
Yeah.
And that the insidious and distorted nature of the whole abortion practice, people will look back on that and wonder how could that have happened?
Almost the way we look back on slavery, mm-hmm. say like how could that have happened in this country?
Well, you know, I mean, I go back. There's that legacy, and there's also in this country, and not often talked about, but that is the eugenics, you know, and that there was a Supreme Court decision. I don't remember the dates on that. Where it was okay to sterilize a woman, right. Because she was considered an imbecile,
exactly.
You know, and
exactly.
and that was legal in California,
right.
And now I mean we look back on that now, and there was a whole culture on that. The mm-hmm. Supreme Court, you know, argued, came down with a decision in favor of that,
yeah.
But now eugenics is. People look back on that now and they says, you know, that can't be. And
that can't be. And
yeah.
Yet the founder of Planned Parenthood, all about that. We want certain people not to have babies.
And the abortion industry is still, in many ways, a very eugenic culture.
Yeah, it's so troubling, but... Even as we are here in California, it's not illegal for us to advocate for life. And we have so many organizations, whether it's 40 Days for Life, the Mother Teresa Home, the Bishop Gallegos Home, Sacramento Life Center, the Gabriel Project, on and on and on. We have many opportunities to promote the culture of life here in the
I think that is... our ability to be able to teach on that subject and to speak on that subject is also supported by the fact that we commit so many good works of mercy to that.
Yeah, we're not just advocating something.
Right.
We've got our feet.
I can't remember what the issue was in the recent papers where one of the commenters was saying that. Why aren't pro-life people, supporting the child and the mother after, after birth? And I that argument is oftentimes thrown out, but I think in terms of our ability to be able to speak, right. With credibility about the dignity of human life is the fact that we do.
Exactly.
You know, we are committed to both in terms of the services that we provide and in terms of the many things that we advocate for,
right.
and that we do care about the yep. dignity of the human person at all stages of life.
It's almost, you only care about the baby in the womb. What about when it's born? has been spoken so many times that it becomes that fact in many people's minds. And you're exactly right. I've argued that to anybody that'll listen to me is look at what the church. Oh, we were just talking about St. Vincent de Paul.
Absolutely.
If somebody came to St. Vincent de Paul with a 2-year-old and said, "We got some problems here," they would find a dentist or a doctor or a nutritionist or whatever it is that 2-year-old needs.
Mm-hmm. And I think oftentimes, within the Catholic tradition, we always have to push ourselves to do better. But I think that the usual line is that you have to practice what you preach. But I do think in many ways, when you look at the spectrum, the wide spectrum of the works of mercy that the church does provide and to which so many Catholic men and women are very devoted, you know, religiously devoted to these works of mercy, that we also have to, there is a certain command for us to preach what we practice.
Yes, yes.
Well, we can do that because our commitment to the works of charity is so strong.
So strong. And, you know, we hear that, you know, we're humble and you don't want to pat yourself on the back. But at some point you want the society to know what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can avail themselves, you know.
Father Dan Madigan, who will again speak at the dinner, and he's not one to sit on his laurels. And I mean, if somebody could sit on his laurels in terms of it would be him. But you know, he is always, saying, "What about this and what about that? And couldn't we do this?" And very much a passion for him. And I think that that's. I know that he's very committed to the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home.
Right. Oh, it's very interesting. We were both at the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home dinner September, and he wasn't even the guest speaker.
Yeah,
but he became the guest speaker.
Right, that's right. And we all got a lecture from him about what else we needed to do. And so that's what I mean.
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
Yeah, there he was, and he says, "Can I say a word or two?"
Yeah.
And we all sat back and listened, and he was right. You know, one thing that has always struck me, I remember being in an event for the AIDS ministry in the Diocese of Sacramento and a fundraiser, and somebody out in society said to me, like, "Where are you going tonight?" And I said, "The Catholic Church has an AIDS ministry? Like, mm-hmm. how contrary," or something. And I said, "It's not contrary at all."
Yeah, yeah.
I think the figure I read, 1 in 4 people with AIDS worldwide is cared for by the Catholic Church.
Yeah, we're one of the largest providers of care.
Yeah, and it those kinds of things, I think that's where we do need to get the word out,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we care.
Yeah, well, yes. I think in some sense, Bob, it is important for us, and we are in a very, polarized situation, and the rhetoric is vicious, and a lot of it is not very helpful.
Right.
Not very helpful,
right.
But that's where our own commitment is, that we have to speak from the gospel, and we have to speak from good works, and that I think and we might say, well, you know, it's not, nobody's listening. But I still think that is our most persuasive and powerful posture.
Yeah, and you know, our posture is, it never fits conveniently into a political party.
Yeah.
This is a really conservative group or this is a really liberal group. We don't fit any of those labels.
Yeah.
I know that if you're against abortion and for some reason, and I've never figured out why, that makes you a conservative.
Yeah, that's right.
But if you're in favor of helping an immigrant, that makes you a liberal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why that's the case, because they're both stem from our belief in
right.
the, dignity of human life.
Well, it's yeah. People try to fit us all into boxes.
Yep, yeah, especially today.
And that's where that's particularly you know, Pope Francis's one of his pastoral principles is that reality is greater than ideas.
Mm.
And that you know, the reality of who we are and of what we do, and the reality of the gospel is greater than the ideas.
Wow.
Bigger than the ideas that we're dealing with.
Bishop, we only have a couple of minutes, but speaking of St. Francis.
Pope Francis.
Did I say St. Francis? We're not speaking of St. Pope Francis. He hasn't been canonized yet. Thank you. For Pope Francis, 10th anniversary, a lot of people thought he was going to be a placeholder or
something.
You know, between popes. Here he is, 10 years.
Well, you know, I will say that. I mean, he is aging, and he does have some ailments, but that's a decision between him and the Almighty to, you know, how long he will continue to lead the church. But I do think that one of the things that I take away from he's been the Holy Father for 10 years. And in his writings, and I think also very much in his actions, that he's drawing from the legacy where he was formed, and that if you read his documents, that he quotes often. And frequently, Saint John Paul II,
right.
and his predecessor Pope Benedict.
Yes,
I mean,
he
cites their documents over and over again. And I, you know, I mean, I would say, you know, in terms of, you know, the recent pontiffs. I mean, I think that he cites his predecessors. More often,
very definitely,
more often than his predecessors cited other popes. I mean, it's really quite remarkable.
Yeah, and you hear sometimes people say, "Oh, well, there's this conflict or something between Pope Benedict and Pope Francis."
Or that they're different.
Yeah,
and I think I on some sense that in terms of particularly some of the initiatives of Pope Francis. Is to see it as a, how should I say, a rupture from from the predecessors and I quite frankly and more often than not when I read the documents or his own explanations, he's drawing from
absolutely.
John Paul and Benedict to in terms of the course that he's trying to set for the church. And one very good example is, you know, the whole expression of culture, the culture of encounter that, you know,
right.
that is in some sense kind of the one of those aspirations of Pope Francis. But yet, he's drawing that from Pope Benedict.
Right.
You know, I mean, I remember in his very first encyclical, Pope Benedict, Deus Caritas Est, God is love. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the very first or second paragraph, Pope Benedict says that, you know, that being a Christian is not an ideology or a way of life. It is an encounter with an event, a person.
Right, right.
That gives us a new horizon and a new direction. And that person is the person of Jesus. And that, you know, Pope Francis, I think, takes that idea and says that's why a cultural encounter is so important, because it opens us up to encountering the wisdom and the mercy of Jesus.
Bishop Soto, always a joy to see you. Thanks for all you do.
It's always good chatting and talking with you.
Go with you, I'm sure.
Oh well, I would just ask that, particularly in this Easter season, I'm very busy with confirmations,
yes.
and thanks be to God. And I know many of my brother priests will be busy with First Communions, and so I mean the Easter season is in full swing,
yes.
And I just ask people to continue to pray for all those who have been baptized, and to pray for all the many children and young people who will be receiving the Easter sacraments, and because this is a great it's not only springtime, but it's a springtime of faith.
Very good. Bishop, thanks so much. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.